Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me today in the studio Dr. Maria Attard. Just a few words about my guest. Dr. Attard is the director and vice chair of the Institute for Sustainable Development, a lecturer in geography with specializations in the application of geographic information systems, GIS, and transport geography. She has been the academic coordinator of the university's Geographic Information Systems Laboratory since 1997 and has taught the discipline across a number of faculties, as well as raised awareness of GIS as a decision support tool amongst government and also the private sector. She is the coordinator of an annual summer school in GIS, organized in collaboration with leading foreign institutions. After completing her doctoral research at UCL, she was also involved in a number of national projects related to land transport. She represented the transport sector on the National Commission for Sustainable Development, as well as in other local and international committees dealing with sustainable mobility research and policy. She has published in the areas of transport as well as in GIS education. In 2008, she was awarded an International Educator Award in GIS by ESRI, and in 2009 was elected Vice President of Eurogeo, the European Association of Geographers. Welcome to you, Dr. Attard.
Thank you.
Well, certainly immediately understand from your rather short bio that I was able to give there that one of your main interests is GIS. The Institute for Sustainable Development was launched, I think, back in January this year. If I remember rightly. Yeah. And you've obviously been working hard in these last months. I hope we'll have a chance to talk specifically about GIS, but I'd like to start by asking you about the Green Travel Initiative. So I'm very interested to hear about the rationale behind it.
Yeah. Well, the Green Travel Plan, really, it's a concept which has its roots, obviously, in planning. It is actually a tool, it's a planning tool, which is used in development planning to actually counterbalance the impacts of development, urban development, and the effects that urban development has on transport and mobility. Basically, what's happened even here in Malta, but certainly before here across many other countries, you've had increased density of development, buildings of much larger concentrations of people, and particularly this was happening in cities, in urban areas, where we had restrictions in the infrastructure of transport that we can build. And the infrastructure that we can use. So cities were expanding, development was increasing, both in terms of spread and density, but obviously we're always restricted with the amount of infrastructure we have for the mobility and access. So if you take Malta, for example, Malta's development, urban development occurred obviously over the past centuries, but it has only been recently that we've shifted to private mobility. So our planning, particularly if you look at the old village cores for cars and roads, was very limited. But similarly, now we're realizing that our dependence on private mobility, so our dependence at using the car as the one and only mode of transport, is causing problems on the infrastructure capacity that we have. And so our roads are congested, particularly at peak hours. We have very limited parking space anywhere. Now, we used to think that it was a problem in Valletta, but now it seems to be spreading all throughout the inner and outer harbour region. And it's not an easy solution to say, oh, well, the government should build more roads and the government should build more parking spaces. Well, we don't have more space for roads and we don't have more space for parking. So we've come to a realization which many countries, particularly in Europe, not much in the United States, but certainly in Europe, have come to this realization that there can never be enough supply for the demand of mobility, because even if you look at countries that have infrastructures which are beyond buses and cars, like we have here, the increase in mobility has gone up throughout all modes. So people are traveling even more, they're going more farther and more frequently, and so our infrastructures for mobility are being stretched at the moment. So not only on land, but also on air and on sea, if you think about it. We hear major arguments about airports, airport extensions, and so on and so forth in other countries. So this issue of increased mobility has, to a certain extent, brought about the idea and the need, really, to try and manage demand. Because supplying it will not solve the problem, and obviously supplying it has also given us concerns and problems with regards to the environment, to our health. So there are energy resources, because obviously they drain our energy resources. So we've come to a stage where I think there is realization that there needs to be a balance between how much we travel, how much we use this, what we perceive to be freedom of mobility, and the impacts that this freedom is having. So in looking at that, the planning tool, one of the planning tools that has been developed is that developments, as they are either growing or when they are being built, have to submit alongside their planning applications a green travel plan, where basically they provide government or the planning agencies an indication of what they intend to do to try and manage that demand.
I think it's a good idea. Obviously, I've done a little bit of research on this for this program, and I looked into it. And I think, in principle, it seems like a very good idea that people who are doing the development should be also thinking in that direction. But is it? I'm playing devil's advocate here. Yeah. Are you putting the onus on the developer a bit too much, perhaps? I mean, this has to be a shared burden, probably between government and the developer, I would imagine.
It depends the way you look at it, because at the end of the day, when a development is occurring, there are obviously planning regulations that dictate, for example, size of the development, that dictate the expansion of a development, and there are obviously standards for parking, there are standards for everything. But one has to keep in mind that a development occurs, at least if you take Malta, okay, in larger countries, there could be a development that occurs in the middle of nowhere. But in the case of Malta, most of the development occurs within already existing urban fabric. And in order to balance out the impact of that development, we hear a lot about, for example, Slima. How many more high-rise buildings can Slima take? I'm sure a lot of people could live together, all together, bang on just a very small area, but their impact in terms of their mobility would suggest that they cannot, because if there are restrictions, for example, on the number of cars that they own, it's useless putting 1,000 people living in a block when you're only, you're assuming that 1,000 car parking spaces will be made available. So it is really and truly a responsibility that we own and we share. Yes, we share it with government, but government cannot magically produce more land for example, or expropriate housing to provide more road. So government is working within the constraints and saying, listen, do take provisions, because if you want the development to happen, you need to make sure that somehow you have means of getting your people to work, for example. So do you have where you can provide them parking? And the developer would say, well, not that much. Well, then show me how you're going to have a development which is sustainable. And reduce, obviously, its carbon footprint, its burden on the infrastructure, particularly when the infrastructure is already at its peak. I mean, if you take the university, for example, we have the hospital. I mean, between the university and the hospital, well, we're talking of a daytime population of something in the region of 25,000 people. And that's synonymous to the largest village, town, we have in Malta. So, and what are the links to this major town? Regional road, Dukikara bypass, there may be some back roads from San Juan, but that's all there is. So we were already at capacity when there was just the university. Now there is the hospital. We can't obviously, well, we could technically build elevated superhighways. Yes, but how realistic and sustainable?
To that.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. But and I've seen them, and they look horrible. I've seen them in other countries, and they're absolutely horrible structures. And nobody wants to see the Maltese landscape, which is already at its, I think, saturation, having also these super elevated highways crossing across, because we need to get places to places quickly. So it's a shared responsibility, sure. If you think about it.
Also, what the Green Travel Plan, I gather, is trying to put across is the idea that here we're really looking at it holistically. We've got to think beyond the actual physical travel bit, because you've spoken about mobility, and obviously people have to get to work, they have to get to the shops, they have to, you know, whatever. Yes. And people expect, the expectations that people have now are huge vis-à-vis mobility.
The biggest problem is the individual expectation that we have come to a stage, and this is not only here, this is supported by literature, if you think about it, and it's literature in psychology, which supports the idea that when you have, or when you arrive to a situation where you have car dependence, what is called car dependence, people's perception of mobility become individualistic. You know, me and how am I going to get there?
Preferably in front of the shop,
at the time that I want. And when you come to a situation where you don't have, you've reached capacity, okay, and you have problems with congestion, you have problems with parking, supply, and so on, that kind of attitude has to change. People will have to start thinking, listen, my impact of my travel by car today will be so and so. It is not a measure, because a lot of people think, oh, these green travel initiatives, you know, they try to push people onto buses or onto cycles or to walking or whatever. I think the principle should go at a higher level, thinking, listen, I share a burden on society and the environment. If I can reduce that burden by just even a little bit, if, say, for example, once a week I can go by bus, if twice a week I can go by bus, that already starts the change, and that has incredibly, because we are a large population here at university, if you take university as an organization and the Green Travel Plan effect of it, could be massive.
Absolutely.
And there are studies that actually calculate this, and it would be actually a very good, interesting economic study to work out the carbon footprint of the various journeys that we have individually coming into university. But the end result basically would be just a set of figures which says, listen, you know, you have, if you travel twice by public transport in a week, you reduce your carbon footprint by so much percentage. But I think now we have come to a realization, both in terms of our health, both in terms of our environment, and time lost, because a lot of people spend a long time in traffic in the morning, for example, getting to work, when really and truly we're covering a ridiculously small distance. So that realization needs to come in parallel with the benefits of trying out something different.
And you mentioned the health benefits. I mean, this is another aspect, part of the holistic picture.
Yes.
As well, that I think is part of this travel plan. You're trying to get people to think about the health, their own health, the health of their children.
Yes.
But then there's the other side of the coin where you say, well, if I take a bike, I'm going to get covered with fumes.
Yes,
so,
yes,
you know,
yes.
There are problems involved in that.
Yes, there are plenty of problems, because even walking has its problems. And they're all related to infrastructure, really, if you think about it. So what the Green Travel Plan does, in actual fact, it's the first stage, it's the initial stage, where we look at the travel behavior of people. And that is the questionnaire to get people's, the student, the staff, the academic staff's reactions to telling us basically what their behavior is and their adaptability to actually use other modes of transport and what they think would be the reason for it. But the questionnaire will give us that information. Then, obviously, the plan really is an exercise where we look at the travel behavior and we see what potential there is for alternatives. Because, obviously, if we look at the university, it's not bang in the middle of a city. It's surrounded by main roads. You know, there is the hospital next to it. So, realistically, because this is, at the end of the day, one has to be realistic in developing a plan. You can't just say, yes, you know, 20% of people will start walking to university. Well, if, you know, not even 5% live within proximity of the university, how can you imagine that to happen? So we need to know where people are coming from, how they get here. So the plan really is there to investigate the options. And then the options, yes. I mean, ideally, we can actually develop measures and have initiatives that support individuals choosing alternative modes. I mean, with the public transport reform, we'll be looking at new opportunities, for example, of people using public transport in a different way. I mean, if you look at the conditions that were, for example, highlighted by the ministry, by government, as to how the new operations will work, technically, I mean, one of the critical issues would be efficiency. If we manage to achieve the efficiency and the frequency that were listed in the tender, in the contract, that would be ideal, because people would actually be able to leave their home 2 minutes, if they live 2 minutes away from the bus stop, before the bus, simply by getting an SMS and telling them that the bus is coming. And that would be fantastic, because that would just get out on the bus stop, the bus picks you up and takes you, in some cases, directly to your place of work, or, you know, through an interchange. We are very lucky at university because we have one major interchange at university. So there are a lot of links to the university which are very fast. So that's an opportunity which we have to seek and investigate with regards to the Green Travel Plan. Cycling as well. We are in the middle of the island. We have that opportunity. Obviously, we have to keep in mind what we encourage in terms, yes, of, yes, fumes, security, because there are a lot of concerns. I know a lot of parents who would never, you know, encourage their children to come to university by bicycle because of the safety reasons. But maybe we can actually take, you know, propose measures, take actions where we put pressure for infrastructure to be created.
The coming of the electric car and the electric motorino hopefully will be another strand,
yes,
in this picture, really.
And for example, motorcycles is a small group of people that actually come by motorcycle. We didn't follow the Italians in this respect. We didn't go we didn't go crazy over motorcycles. Obviously, we have the ideal geography and climate for motorcycles, but we didn't, because obviously there were social and historical reasons why we didn't go for motorcycles. But yes, that could be an option. And we have champions here that come every day by motorcycles. They park without any problems. They have access and absolutely no problem. Like, we have champions for cycling. We have professors that actually come to work cycling every single day, and I happen to be on one of the routes when I come to work of one of these professors. And evidently he arrives at least 20 minutes before I do, because he cycles straight ahead without any problem. And
he waves at you.
Sometimes, yes, mockingly.
Mockingly, yes.
So there are great opportunities. But if we are not there, and I think the university is a great place to start this, if we are not one of the leaders in this, then nothing will change. And we have
the university should be, yes.
Yes,
the university should be the place, the cutting edge,
of these initiatives.
Absolutely.
So yes, we're going to work on the Green Travel Plan. We're going to collect data. We're going to collect information about people, and hopefully this will be the start of a movement. There are also some student associations that are actually working on green initiatives. I was at Threshers Weekend, the University of Malta Geographical Society are actually launching a green student campaign, which I thought was quite good and quite interesting. And the president actually won one of the awards set by a radio station on a green student, and he was living on reduced electricity consumption and cycling. And he won. So I thought that was a very interesting,
excellent,
a very, very interesting perspective. And by going in these different initiatives, I think as a whole, we have the potential to make a difference. If we manage to make a difference, then it will be easier for the rest of the country to follow, basically, because we don't have just, you know, the status of being the university, but we have the amount of people, you know, to say, listen, this is how much change we've achieved. And obviously the researchers to actually look into it and say, yes, this is the actual amount of carbon that we've actually managed to reduce.
Yeah, and so you've got the theory,
exactly,
the theory, yes, and
the practice,
the practice, yes, most definitely. And on Freshers Week we had the new map of the proposed
public
map
transport,
of public,
yes,
transport,
exactly,
which is obviously modelled on the
yes,
London Tube
underground
map.
Yes.
It's really looked fantastic, and I must say, I mean, I've been living here obviously now for a long time, but I could never understand why all roads led to Valletta.
Because historically that's how public transport organically grew.
Mm.
That was the concept that worked well in the 30s and in the 40s, but was never updated.
Well,
and it will be a big change. It will be a big change when all of a sudden the network, which was dependent on Valletta, which obviously then reflected also on the traveling patterns of the population, to now change it, and obviously for people to now adapt to not only a changing network, but also to change their travel patterns. So it will be an interesting and challenging time, I think, for public transport. But I am positive it's for the good. So,
literally, a couple of minutes that we've got left at our disposal. I'd just like to ask you about the Institute's activity, because I know, obviously, the Green Travel Plan is just part of what you've been doing these last months.
Yes, we just published our annual report. We published it online. And yes, Green Travel was one of our initiatives, but we had a number of other initiatives. We had a very successful summer school this year, once again in GIS. We had a very good number of participants. The feedback we got from participants was very good. So we're looking forward actually to continue these types of courses. We're looking also at organizing for next year something in entrepreneurship, which would support, I know, quite a lot of interested people in that area. So our summer school program seems to be actually expanding, which is very good. We've also done some research projects. So we have a research project that is looking at future capital and the skills required for human resources in the future, what Malta needs. And basically this ties down to what the university in the future will look at in terms of provision of courses and so on. So we have that project which we're currently doing with the economics department. It's fascinating looking at all the different aspects that affect education, the sectors of industry that Malta is looking at developing, trying to forecast these and actually then forecast the skills and the resources that we'll need. So that's one very exciting project that we're looking at. And then the second one, which we're doing with the engineering department and faculty, is about modeling or using technology to model spatial behavior or distribution of air pollutants. We're working on this project with MEPA, with the Environment Directorate. They collect data from around the island, and we're trying to use technology to actually model and predict behavior of pollution. So those are two research projects. We have others, other projects that have looked at development of study programs. We're very lucky we have four master's researchers this year starting. So we managed to start the program and get four researchers working in the institute. So we're very, very happy about that, because that's four research projects that will be taking off this year, two of which are full-time. So we will be seeing a product sort of within 1 year, and the other two are part-time.
Well, I mean, sustainable development obviously covers a multitude of
yes.
things, and you've obviously got your work and the work of the Institute cut out for you for the future. And I'd like to thank you, Dr. Maria Attard, for coming to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series, University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.